the show, Chris Lee, Vandy 24/7, and of course, Southeastern 16. Chris, thank you so much for making the time. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, good morning. Can't wait to do this. This season is just so much fun already, and I think there's so much more of it ahead.
Yeah, and you were telling me off air, man, the media requests are come flying in. That's quite unusual for people very eager to talk Vanderbilt football. But man, this is the best time to be a Vanderbilt fan, isn't it?
I think this was maybe spoken of in Revelation. You know, signs of the times. You know, Vanderbilt and Alabama's college game day coming off an upset last year. Yeah, it's a wild time.
And, I mean, can Vanderbilt realistically win this football game? Because I certainly think they can, but what are your thoughts?
No, I think they can, and I think that's almost a bigger story than them winning last year. Like, if you had said, I think when I walked off the field covering that, I mean, first of all, like, I never saw that coming. No, they did. They predicted during the week, actually. And when I was covering the post game and everything, like, it wasn't this jubilant scene of, I can't believe we did this. It was... we expected to do this, which seemed crazy, but it wasn't crazy to them. And I think that's part of why they did it. But if you'd said, hey, Chris, you know, a year from now when they play again, it might be up for legitimate debate on whether they win or not. And by the way, Alabama's not bad. I don't think I'd have believed you, but that's where we are. And I think, honestly, if you want to go back a little bit, I think we might look back on last year's game that Vanderbilt won is maybe like one of the defining games, and maybe the defining game in this era, because it has now unleashed things that you never thought were possible, and there's a parity that we have never seen.
Yeah, no doubt. And how big is an impact is on all of this is the man we have yet to mention here, Mr. Diego Pavia, just his impact on the entire Vanderbilt program.
I think it's huge. Somebody asked me on one of the shows I did this week, is he the most important or best or impactful athlete in Vanderbilt history? I said, well, you know, he's got half a season to play and then some. You know, they're going to the postseason. We'll see what that looks like. But, you know, and look, he could get hurt the first series of Alabama and be done for the year. And then this is a very different conversation about them. But if he is healthy and finishes up the season, you know, I've covered some great baseball teams, right? I've covered two teams that won national titles. I had number one picks in the draft, Golden Spikes Award, all that. And like, I think anytime you get a championship, that takes precedent. But hey, you know, college baseball is nowhere near on everybody's mind the way that college football is. And yeah, I think you could argue. And maybe part of it is like what happens from here. Like, let's say Vanderbilt has a great season. It ends well. He gets all kinds of hardware. Well, if they don't follow up a few years down the line, then maybe it's kind of a so what. That was a nice story in the moment. But like, if they do follow up and they've got money, they've got people over there that can write some pretty crazy checks. And now that there's a little bit of buy-in, I mean, you don't know what happens next. But I think you could look back at if 10 years from now they're still competitive, and he finishes it off, you might be able to say, hey, he was the most important athlete they ever had.
Yeah, hey, I'm glad you said that, Chris, because obviously his impact on the football team is kind of evident to anybody that is following Vanderbilt football or just SEC football. But what potentially is his impact on the university? Because it's what a unique, you know, like storm of events here where you've got renovated stadium, you've got an expanded SEC, you've got a Netflix documentary, and then you insert this New Mexico State transfer. But if Vanderbilt can kind of keep this going, and even in the post-Pavia era, could we be looking back at, you know what, a similar impact as like a Johnny Manziel had for A&M to where, you know, Vanderbilt could be, you know, a mainstay here in this conference, not to say they're going to, you know, win the league every year or anything, but just be at least be competitive. Could you foresee him having that large of an impact on the entire university?
Oh, I think it could be greater. And I'll tell you why. Johnny Manziel won the Heisman, rightfully so. He was a great player, college football legend. But like, let's say Johnny Manziel never shows up at Texas A&M. They're still winning 8-9 games, 10, going to bowls. I don't think, as good as Johnny Manziel was, I don't know that he made A&M after that like a lot better, because they're invested and they've had a history being good in football. Vanderbilt, they've been awful. I mean, they had won, I think, coming into last year, two games against Power 5 teams in 2020, 21, 22, and 23. I mean, that's, you know, Paul Feinbaum a year ago was doing shows and asking the question, has Vanderbilt won its last game in the SEC as a member of the SEC? And where college football was going, I don't think that was a completely legitimate question, given the talk of the super leagues and stuff. But I'll go back a few years. I used to get told by people in the know over there that, hey, coach needs to win. If he does a little bit, then we'll provide him with resources. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You walk in the building, you know, the stadium is 2/3 of everybody else's fans. The facilities are 2 or 3 decades behind the times. There's nothing about your football program that's cutting edge. There's nothing about your football program where you're outspending anybody else on coaching salaries. Like, so you mean to tell me that in order to give a coach the resources to win, you got to win? And, I mean, it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And like, what chance does anybody have there? And every now and then a coach would hit it right with players and transfers and maybe keeping guys healthy. But like, even when they did, was Bobby Johnson going 7-6 in 08. And, you know, I just thought the most fitting thing about that year was when they won a bowl game, the MVP was the punter. And then you go forward a couple years and James Franklin, you know, has a couple of 9-4s and the league was down. I get it. And maybe they caught the best end of the schedule, whatever. And you know, you win 9 games at Vanderbilt, I don't care who you play. That's an accomplishment, right? And they were starting to buy in. And then the Brandon Vanderberg rape thing happened. And I'll give the school credit. Instead of covering it up, they reported the police. They did the right thing. You know, they respect the, you know, a lot of schools would have covered that up. They didn't. But the aftermath was like football on campus was dead. Like there was not going to be more investment. There would not be admissions favors. There were going to be nothing like that. And so they spent a long time just in the wilderness. All that to say, now Clark Lee is now one. There's been no off the field incidents. If there have, I never knew about them. You know, the closest thing to that is the Pavia brothers getting arrested here and there, but that's not Diego, right? I mean, it's been a good story. They've kept their nose clean. They've won games. They've been fun to watch. They've got a likable coach. They've got likable players. Like, this is the time, like, if they're ever going to do it, I think the recipe for it is right in front of you. Because, like, if James Franklin had stayed at Vanderbilt, if it wasn't that, it might have been something else down the line. I just think character-wise, he and Clark are cut from different cloths. But I feel like this is about to be the time where we find out a lot of the answers of, okay, what could be if they really got invested?
Mm-hmm. Well, how invested, if that's the right word, or committed is Clark Lee to Vanderbilt? Because it's natural, the more Vanderbilt does well on the field, you're going to see his name start to pop up on these, you know, the coaching searches. Yeah. Whether that, personally, I don't think there's anything to those. I mean, everybody's got to get their engagement and all that, and I get all that. But he's in a unique situation. For those maybe that don't know, he walked on at Vanderbilt, played at Vanderbilt, and man, I told you this the other day. I think he legitimately, if he stays there a long time and has success, I mean, they could name the football stadium after him, you know, because he could have that big of an impact. He's not going to have that anywhere else. You know, how committed to Vanderbilt is Clark Lee?
I would say pretty committed. You know, he's got to continue to get stuff. And like, if he's smart, and Tim Corbin has done this in baseball 1,000 times, every time he gets another offer, he has leveraged that for more this or that or the other. And I would tell Clark Lee, and he probably knows this, like if anybody comes sniffing around, I would play interested. Even if you're not that interested, and see what that gets you in commitments, because that's historically how you've had to do it at Vanderbilt. Now, look, I don't know how interested, like, let's just say Florida. I mean, it's been a nice story. It's in front of everybody. But when you start looking into the record, you're like, well, you know, he had a couple of winless seasons in the league. And, You know, do you sell that to the fan base? I don't know. Is he the type of coach that could go to a power, you know, power four program and win at the highest level? Maybe. But there's some coaches that are just great fits where they are. I mean, Alabama, great example. You know, remains to be seen. Maybe Kalen DeBoer was a great hire. Maybe he was just a great coach that was a bad fit at Alabama. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I think, you know, first of all, his parents are here. His dad still goes to games. He's a doctor, like almost within walking distance of the stadium. You know, he grew up here. I think that roots are important to him. He's kind of sentimental. You know, you'll see him tear up in a press conference, or, you know, I think he's maybe wired a little differently than a lot of coaches. I think it's unlikely that he leaves, but I would 100% use that to leverage to get whatever it is he needs, because that's how you have to do it here.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular matchups that in this specific game against Alabama that concern you for Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think the way Ty Simpson's played lately. And look, Alabama was a team before the season I picked to win the national title. I'm not quite sure what they are, because we've seen some really good and we've seen some really bad. But the trend line has gotten better since the Florida State game. And Simpson's not missing passes. I mean, Mike, they haven't turned the ball over all year, which is amazing. Usually when you're Vanderbilt, you're playing somebody else that's on paper better than you, you're going to have to get some turnovers or penalties. They've kind of cut that out as part of their identity. That was a big reason Vanderbilt won the game a year ago. So that's number one. Number two, I think they've had some trouble in pass coverage lately, the last couple of weeks. And a lot of that was with the reserves in. But Ryan Williams is a handful when he shows up ready to play. Jeremy Bernard's been really good. The Horton kid's been good. Alabama's always got 4- and 5-star dudes. And now they've got a quarterback. It looks like he is getting in a groove. I think I worry for them. And Alabama hasn't as much been a big play offense, but I could see it, because I think right now that is my biggest concern about Vanderbilt. What happens when you get up against a really good quarterback who can get guys open downfield? If you don't collapse the pocket and get in a guy's face in time, I think that's the place that if you're Alabama, you have to wake up on Saturday morning and feel like that may be our best shot to win, is to exploit them downfield.
Mm-hmm. And then last year, kind of the upset or the recipe for the upset was ball control, making critical plays on third down. And really, I thought physically, but I don't know if dominating is the right word, but physically beating Alabama, which I never could have imagined Vanderbilt ever doing that. But they did it. But this year, Vanderbilt is a lot more explosive. They got more weapons. Do you think they go back to what worked last year? Or is this a team that, you know, if they're going to win this game, it's going to be Diego having to outscore Ty Simpson? Where do you land on that?
I do think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I question either defense's ability. And, like, they're not awful defenses, either of them. But I think the offenses are the better sides. Oh, look, here's the thing, Mike. And again, they have not played the better defenses on their schedule. That's coming. But they're averaging 49 points a game. Pavia hasn't played any or most of the fourth quarter every time. I'll watch them and I'll go, you know, you see Diego drop back and I'm like, why are they doing this? They're getting whatever they want in the run game. They're averaging over 6.5 yards on pure run plays because their offensive line is dominating up front. And then he drops back and he hits somebody 30 yards downfield and throws, you know, they go hurry up and throw a touchdown 20 seconds after that. And you're like, okay, well, I guess that's why you didn't run the ball. But like they're getting right now whatever they want, whenever they want it. They're doing it with a ton of guys. And they're just really, really dangerous.
And if Vanderbilt wins this game, and I'm not saying that you're predicting that, but if they do, what is the ceiling for this team?
I think if they win the game, I said this a while. Like, I think if they just win their home games and lose all their remaining road games, they're 9-3. And I think as much as the resume might deserve to get in, I think you're going to have some issues with a lot of 10 and 11 win teams in other conferences, and it's going to be tough. I think if they win that game, I don't know, 50-50 shot at the playoffs on the table. You know, they've got LSU at home, which is beatable. Missouri at home, which I think is – I think you and I share the same opinion in Missouri. I think they're really, really, really good and better than people think. Auburn feels like they can handle it. Kentucky's a game they should win. You know, and then you got at Texas and at Tennessee. I don't know what Texas is yet. We'll find out. And Tennessee will be healthier by that point. That'll be a tough one. But, I mean, I think playoff is absolutely on the table if they were to go get one. And I can't believe I'm saying that. But, you know, tell me, based on what you're seeing, where that's wrong. I mean, again, would have work to do and may need to win all their home games to do it, because a logjam, I think, is going to be there. But it's a much better team than they had a year ago.
Yeah, so Vanderbilt, Tennessee, for a playoff spot, just like we all predicted, man, in the preseason, right?
Well, look, first of all, it's not going to go that way. We could sit here and you know, spend another hour naming scenarios. And like it's like the NCAA tournament when you pick your bracket and you feel good about it. And then, you know, by 3 o'clock on Thursday of the tournament, you know, it's all gone to shreds and,
right,
you know, you feel like an idiot. But yeah, that would be a lot of fun, right?
Hey, so not only Vanderbilt coverage over at 24/7, but of course, the Southeastern 16. So you cover the whole league. Where do you land when it comes to the best team in the SEC, Chris? Because I tell you, week to week, I change my opinion. And yeah, so where do you land there? Who do you think today is the best team in the Southeastern Conference?
I mean, right now it's got to be Ole Miss if results matter, right? And I know their schedule, they're not playing. I mean, I don't know what LSU is yet. LSU's a good win, right? I don't think it's the great win we thought. But like there are other weeks, they're playing some teams that are okay. Tulane, I mean, Kentucky, if it wasn't in the SEC, would be competitive, I think, in some other leagues. And I think their schedule's been like a little bit better than people realize with decent wins. I've got them one. I question whether they'll stay there, but the schedule is really favorable compared to most teams. I think Oklahoma is in that conversation. You got the material issue, but man, their defense, Mike, has been so, so good. I think Missouri could legitimately be in that conversation. I mean, statistically, they've been dominant. The schedule's been a little bit lacking, but man, they have handled business every week. Now, do worry about them missing field goals in big games after their kicker injury. Mm-hmm. Alabama could end up being that team. Tennessee could end up being that team. If LSU finds any kind of a passing game, there's so much talent there. Like, I think the discussion for the top spot, you know, could go eight teams deep or so. We've never seen it like this. I've got Ole Miss one right now, based on what it's earned, but I don't know that I'm going to feel like that's the best team in the conference, you know, but by season's end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and heck, not that I'm critiquing what you just said, but two teams you didn't even list there, Georgia and A&M,
yeah,
they could be there as well. And that goes to your point of so many, eight deep, so many could be there. I've never seen it like this. And again, we're a month in, so maybe a slight overreaction. Things could really clear up in the next month. But I don't know about you, Chris, but I'm really enjoying this kind of a free-for-all where Alabama and Georgia don't have it locked up by mid-October, you know?
I say this all the time. The question about the SEC used to be, okay, can anybody come within 10 points of fill in the blank? Alabama, Georgia, Florida, LSU. Like, are they going to lose to anybody at any point? And like that was the discussion. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be them, or, you know, is a meteor going to hit somewhere and hit somebody else? Now, like, it's this whole conversation of a lot of teams. And like, you know, and you're right about A&M. A&M may have the best win of anybody so far at Notre Dame. I think they're really good. And I didn't mean to leave them out. It just, there's that many good teams. Like, Auburn is still capable of playing spoiler. I mean, if Jackson Arnold shows up anything capable of what he's doing and gets rid of the ball earlier, he's a problem. And it's just this fun discussion of a lot of competitive teams where anything can happen any Saturday. And it's just, we've never seen anything like it. I don't think this is going away.
Right. And that's right where I wanted to go. Cause it's just likely going to ramp up with a 9-game schedule coming next season. Now, there's some fans, Chris, that are, they seem totally opposed to this because they're fearful that this is going to cost the SEC playoff spots, which it may very well do that. But what is your thoughts on the conference going to a 9-game schedule next year?
Well, I mean, I think we figured it was a matter of time. Every time you were leaving, you know, I don't know, Alabama and Jacksonville State on the schedule, as opposed to, you know, an extra game with Alabama and Texas A&M, like, you can do the math on that, right? So you knew that that time was going to come. Like, I think to me, you could see that several years ago. And the obstacle is what we know it was. It was like, okay, you got some of these other teams that are not playing the schedules SEC teams are. And that's how, you know, what, a 10-2, 11-2 SMU gets in the playoff last year. And Alabama at 9-3 with a lot of quality wins does not. And so, you know, interesting that the day after the committee says, yeah, we're going to emphasize strength of schedule, what happens? We get what we'd all been begging for a long time. My issue with it, I still don't know that the committee, like, when you heard them make their explanations a year ago about who got in the playoff, they were just like, I don't know how much thought really went into it. And, like, if we go this year and it's the same thing, right, because I think there's going to be some tough decisions, if there's not a process that they can explain where they say, well, this team from the ACC at 11-1 got in over this 9-3 SEC team, and they give me a good explanation, okay, I can buy that. But if it's just, well, you know, this team from the ACC won all five of its road games, and one of them was, you know, the best one was NC State. You know, if I'm hearing that kind of nonsense, then it tells me that the fears are validated. I think if that process is sound in the end and they can explain their answers, then okay, you can feel better about it going forward. But to me, that's the key, is like, okay, you've been given your assurances, but what happens if we get to Selection Sunday and, you know, somebody from the SEC gets left out in favor of a team from another league that played a weak schedule and they don't have a good explanation for it? Then I think you've got big problems.
Well, we've spent a lot of time talking about the good teams in the conference. What about, I wanted to ask you about Arkansas and that job that's open. And I mean, I don't even think, well, I would say I know that they don't even know who they're going to hire at this point in time. So we could just throw darts at a board and try to guess. But I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on the job itself, and if they can get their alignment together, how good of a coach do you think they can get there in Fayetteville? Because, man, Hunter Yurecek, he's doing a tremendous job kind of talking down the job, I feel like. I mean, he cut the knees out from Sam Pittman, and then, you know, after firing him, let it be known, yeah, he didn't have the resources here to win. he's going about it a unique way. But let's assume, which this is probably, we should not assume, Chris, but let's assume they get alignment there, they get commitment in NIL, and they get the big booster people on board and moving in the same direction. How good of a coach do you think Arkansas can land?
Well, look, just by virtue of being in the SEC, right, that's like being in the blue and the green section of the Monopoly board.
Right.
you know what I mean? Like, even the Vanderbilt job right now, you know, if Clark Lee gets hit by a bus and they play their cards right, that can be attractive. You know, Kentucky, same thing. You know, there may or may not be an opening there. But, I mean, look, it is a large and passionate fan base. It is really the only school in the area. I mean, Arkansas State, I guess, is the only other FCS or FBS team, but, you know, I don't think that really matters. But my concern is what yours is. The AD, it just feels like he's been sabotaging that job. And Mike, if you're going to work at a place, you want to know, do you have a good boss? Is it stable? I wonder, like, did they make the wrong firing first? That's because I think it could be a really, really good job, but I do wonder how many coaches that might take that job. I mean, let's say Danny White is the AD there. I think he's done a terrific job at Tennessee. You can't tell me that job presents differently if he's the AD there, other than what they've got. So, I mean, that's the big, look, everybody's unique, right? there may be that one person out there that nobody knows that may want out of what appears to be a good situation, but maybe a guy got a divorce, or maybe there's friction between him and his boss. And there's always a chance you can pluck a coach, especially in the SEC, of a guy that you don't know that is wanting. So I never rule that out, but it feels like they have handicapped themselves a little bit lately, and maybe a lot, just by what their AD has said and maybe not said recently.
Right. And just to your point, I know it didn't work out as well as they would have liked, but I mean, even Arkansas pulled Brett Bielema when he really had it rolling up Wisconsin. And quite frankly, they've never been the same. But I mean, that was quite the coup when they landed him. You know what?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you wonder, like, how would that go if you had it back, right? maybe a reboot. I just kind of have no idea where that's going, because there's so many there's reasons we can name where it could be a great job, and there's reasons that you could name where if you're a good up and coming coach, you might be best to sit that one out and wait for the next one.
Yeah, and you just never know. Like you said, you know, some of these are maybe a little obvious, like a Dabo Swinney, to where I don't think he's getting fired anytime soon, but there could be a coach where, or a Lincoln Riley, or, you know, I'm kind of naming guys that are kind of unsettled in a way, but there could be I'm just inserting a name, a Shane Beamer, who knows he's a year away from being on that hot seat. And you're always, these coaches are smart. They're always trying to stay ahead of that. You know what?
Yeah. Or like, here's like in basketball, Buzz Williams left A&M, where he'd done a really solid job. The product was getting a little bit boring. You know, they'd go 10 minutes without hitting a basket, which doesn't tend to excite your fans. And now he's at Maryland, which is probably a better job anyway. But like, Buzz had made that a good job. But I think occasionally coaches get out and realize, okay, maybe it's getting a little stale here. I've had the program really good, but we haven't been great. I'm one bad season away from everybody wanting my head. That might be the kind of coach that they can get. And probably it depends on the openings, right? If there's not a lot of great openings this year, maybe you pluck a guy like that who just needs to time it right and get out. That's part of it too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chris. Hey, last thing for you. I really appreciate your time. We got maybe not the most attractive weekend on paper in the Southeastern Conference. There's a lot of double digit, favorites in the conference, but if there's a team that is most likely to pull an upset this weekend, we got Kentucky as a 20-point dog at Georgia. We got Florida as a home dog against Texas by 6.5. Vanderbilt on the road, of course, at Alabama, 10.5-point underdog. And Mississippi State, a 14.5-point underdog at Texas A&M. Not that you're outright saying this is guaranteed to happen, but which underdog could you most likely see pulling the upset this weekend?
I think Vanderbilt is the answer. Now, I think Alabama wins the game. If you're asking me for a pick, I think it's like a 38-31 Alabama type of game. But I think upset is on the table, because Pavia is just so difficult to contain. And they've just, like, if you thought their team last year was, this team is legitimately 10 points better than last year's. They got so much more to contend with this year. So I think that's one. Call me crazy, I think the next one I'd go is Texas at Florida, because neither team has found a consistent passing game. I mean, I know you sounded the alarm on DJ Lagway all summer in a way that nobody else did. And you may have nailed it there, but let's say injury is a thing and he gets 2 weeks and maybe he's better. Like, we know what the guy's capable of doing, right? Their defense is still really good. Arch Manning has had one good game this season. It was against Sam Houston. You've seen Billy Napier's teams at the right moment regroup when everybody counted them out. Like, Florida's still a really talented team. To me, I think that's the next one. I think Mississippi State is good. I think A&M in College Station is just, you know, I think that spread's about right. I mean, You never know with Kentucky. They show up once a year and shot. And like, they've matched up pretty well with Georgia, but I just don't think they're – I mean, and Cutter Bowley was just a – you know, they had two turnovers that went for scores against them. That's a disaster waiting to happen potentially.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, to me, I would go Vanderbilt and Florida in that order.
Okay, yeah, I was kind of hoping you said that. I always like to needle the Texas people. They're, you know, they're big bad, but they're so sensitive. So it conflicts with one another, but I enjoy it nonetheless, Chris. And I enjoyed this conversation. Before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you and how to find your work?
Yeah, most of my work is at Southeastern 16. You can find that on YouTube. You can find that on your podcast platforms. We cover baseball, football, basketball year-round, literally. I'll be at SEC Media Days for basketball here in a couple of weeks. And, of course, the Vandy stuff, Vandy 24/7, we've got a podcast with that. And, again, that's been more interesting this year than I would have ever imagined.